Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Jane Williams. Last month, Campaign 2000, a children's advocacy group, released their annual report card on child poverty in Canada. According to the report, more than 1 million children still live in poverty, even though the country has been experiencing an economic boom. This is despite a vow by the federal government 15 years ago to end child poverty. Laurel Rothman is the national coordinator for Campaign 2000, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Laurel.
Good morning.
Now, what do we mean when we say poor?
Well, in Canada, we actually do not have an official poverty line, but Statistics Canada has developed what's called the low income cutoff, and it is a relative measure of poverty that would make sense in our North American context, and it's adjusted for the size of the family and the size of the community, and is updated every year and has been in existence for 25 years. And I say all that because I think frequently a fair amount of energy may go into the debates about how you measure poverty, but we would argue, as do most of the major social policy organizations, that the low-income cutoff makes sense for Canada and, most importantly, is, you know, a continuous measure that we've looked at over, people have studied over 25 years. And so what it means is that a family, one parent, one child in Vancouver, who had less than approximately $24,000 of income before taxes and deductions, would be considered living in low income.
And it varies very much, I guess, according to whether somebody's in Vancouver with the high housing charges in Vancouver or whether they're in rural Saskatchewan.
Yes, it certainly does. And while we don't say that the LICO is in any way a perfect measure, it is a consistent one. We can talk more about measurement if you like, but I think our greater interest and concern is, you know, what do we see as doable strategies to help improve the situation for low-income children and their families.
Now, your report showed that child poverty in Canada was actually declining over a five-year period up until 2 years ago. What happened to reverse that trend?
Well, it's an interesting question about why, from its height after the major recession of the early 90s, we, you know, had reached, I think it was in 95 or 96, one in five children was living in poverty. And as both the economy rebounded and prospered, and we had some incremental improvements to social policies through the child benefit, we began to see some slow improvement. And, you know, we're not sure what happened in 2002 to turn the tide, if you will. And I think it probably will remain to be seen for the next year or two whether this is a trend or whether this is a blip. I mean, I think 2002 still was a good year for the economy. Unemployment remained relatively low. Job creation was primarily in full-time. You know, full-time jobs were the primary type of jobs that were created. But what we do know is that the number of lone parent-led, female-led families went up and had also been going down. So we're quite concerned that it may indeed be low-income, female-led lone parents that are the greatest source of the increase for the year, but we don't exactly know for sure.
Now, you mentioned one of the factors in what makes a person poor, and you talked about unemployment. What other kind of factors should we look at?
Well, certainly housing and high-quality early learning and child care. If we remember the important book that Mel Hertig wrote a few years ago called Pay the Rent or Feed the Children, Feed the Kids, we know that in families, indeed most families have, particularly those on in vulnerable situations, struggle to balance the budget for the basics. A roof over our head, hopefully a secure, suitable one, money for food, and then can consider the options around additional education, training, employment, etc.
Now, you mentioned single mothers. Is that the largest group when we look at which children are living below the poverty line?
No, actually, the majority of children living in poverty live in two-parent families across Canada. That is an important fact to highlight. I think the myth is probably out there that most low-income children live in single, lone parent-led families, but it is actually two-parent families, and unfortunately, two-parent families with children living in low income remain far below the poverty line. So they're in what we call the depth of poverty is quite severe.
Did you also spend some time then looking at that, at how much below the poverty line families are?
Yes, actually, low-income couples with children are on average $9,000 below the poverty line. So that's quite frightening. If I don't have the figures in front of me, but I believe the low-income cutoff for two parents with two children in a large city like Vancouver is approximately $33,000 a year. So if you think about the fact that on average that family might live at more like $24,000 a year, one can appreciate most people who pay rent and buy groceries and know how hard it is to both find and pay for reliable early learning and child care can imagine how impossible that situation is.
Now, if you look at the country as a whole, then you say the number of children living in poverty is, there's a higher number living with two parents. But when you look at specific groups, you've mentioned already single mother families. Are there other groups where the percentage within that group is particularly high?
Definitely. There's no question that children with a disability have a much higher likelihood of being in poverty, about 1 in 4, and that's both because of the costs associated with the disability, as well as the lost potential income from primarily mothers who find themselves having very few options but to stay at home and care for a child with complex needs, as well as often the lack of affordable child care, and as well, children from visible minority families, children of Aboriginal identity, children in immigrant families, all are more likely to live in poverty. And I think our a very serious concern also is that children in families who have recently immigrated, that is, in the last 5 to 10 years, have a much higher likelihood of being in low-income situation.
That's a very surprising statistic, that the families of recent immigrants, because when I think about the government's immigration policy, what they're trying to do is bring in people with a high level of education, and yet you say that of that group which has been affected by this immigration policy, then more of those children are living in poverty.
This is true, and I think that if we look at, in particular, our major immigrant reception areas, if you will, or urban areas in Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, where the vast majority of immigrants, at least initially, settle, we see that often people who come with education experience and credentials are not having that recognized, accepted, or acknowledged. So we all know we may, in many of those places, have among the most overqualified people delivering pizzas and driving taxis and other unskilled jobs for which don't make a lot of sense. So certainly with our partners in the immigrant serving communities and organizations, they're pushing to have strategies to acknowledge and speed up the recognition of those credentials.
Now, you mentioned Aboriginal children as being a group that is affected. Do you have a sense of the percentage?
Yes, and I should say that these statistics are from the 2001 census, and therefore we only get them every 5 years. And children of Aboriginal identity 40% of them are living in low-income families. And I should be specific and say those are children living off reserve, off First Nations communities, primarily in our urban areas. So if we wanted to, so it's quite high, but it would even perhaps be an underestimate because currently the census does not, and I shouldn't, yes, I won't say that. I think we may not have factored in the potential for poverty in First Nations communities. So I think that while that is a shocking and unacceptable figure, it may not be the full picture. I should add also, though, while it is a very high number, it did come down from the previous census 5 years ago, and that's an important piece of good news.
Now, one thing that the federal government appears to be moving forward on is a national system of early learning and childcare, and the report says that this is crucial in the fight against child poverty. What is the connection between early learning and childcare and poverty?
Right. I think we would say it's an overlap, because with regard to early learning and childcare, Campaign 2000 recognizes that this is a human development issue for all children. Within that broad approach, we would say that in particular for children in low-income families, early learning and child care both supports children in their developmental needs and should have the potential to support parents in their desire to seek more training and or education, seek employment or additional, you know, be able to take full-time work. And in that sense, it's an absolute essential for helping parents to achieve economic independence.
Now, you've pinpointed that system, the early learning and childcare system, as one of the recommendations that you make. What are the other four recommendations?
The other recommendations we say are the other, we need to break that logjam on affordable and social housing, where we know that the federal and provincial and territorial governments have indeed committed money. So now we want to see them make sure that the money is actually flowing to communities to build additional units and to, in some cases, short-term support some rent supplements. We also are saying that we need to take another look at the next phase of an effective child benefit system, because basically we're saying if we're really going to help people be independent, we need to have the minimum wage raised across this country to $10 an hour and the child benefit to be raised to a maximum of $4,900 per year. And together, those two strategies will ensure that parents have a pathway out of poverty. That amount would be for one parent and one child if there were that combination of income and child benefit. And we are two-thirds of the way there. So we talked about better jobs, effective child benefit, early learning and child care, affordable housing. So those are our main recommendations, along with some other more specific ones.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Laura.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Laura Rothman, National Coordinator of Campaign 2000. I'm now joined on the phone by Michael Goldberg, who's on the National Steering Committee of Campaign 2000. And here in BC, he's also with First Call and the Social Planning and Research Council. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Now, how do BC's child poverty rates compare with what's happening at a national level?
They're worse. The trend in BC has been going up over the 2001-2002 calendar years, and the jump in 2002 is really quite significant. We're almost at 20% rates in BC.
So we didn't experience that downturn in the rates that occurred nationally then?
No, we did experience the downturn from the mid-90s when the rates were very high all across the country, and there's been a continuing decline between 96 and 2000 in the child poverty rates in BC, as there was across the country. Our upturn started a year earlier and got much worse in 2002.
And how do we compare if we look at BC in terms of the poorest provinces in the country? Where do we line up there?
Well, we're now in the third place, having the third most children in low-income families, only behind Newfoundland and Manitoba, which have traditionally always had the highest rates.
That's really shocking when you look at the wealth in BC.
Yes, there, you know, and while the we were, you know, the complaint was made that, you know, the economy has improved in BC, and that's true. Clearly, the distribution of the results of the improving economy in 2002 have not been been evenly divided. They've gone in, you know, there's been a lot of very, very good jobs that have been created, and then a lot of jobs that pay very low wages.
Now, from what I was speaking with Laurel, it seems like many of the parents of children living in poverty are actually working full-time. Are there particular aspects to the BC situation that mean that those people are poor? Is it to do with our minimum wage? Or what is there special about what's happening in BC?
Well, the numbers in BC in terms of, you know, employment attachment are about very much similar to what was happening nationally overall. A little over 20%, 22% of the families in BC who have incomes below the poverty line were working full-time, full year. That means by Stats Canada's counting that they worked a minimum of 49 weeks, or the adults combined worked a minimum of 49 weeks at a rate of a minimum of 30 hours a week. There's another group equally as large, a little bit bigger, that worked full year but didn't have full-time work. So part of the problem, I think, had to do with the changes that occurred in the Employment Standards Act in BC. We do have the highest minimum wage in the country, so it's not just the minimum wage side of it, although it's far below the $10 that's being recommended. But also we reduced our call-out hours from 4 to 2. So in many cases, people are only getting paid for 2 hours of work every time they're called to work.
And if you look at the statistics for children who live in poverty, like move in and out of poverty, maybe their parents are working and then they're laid off, how do the statistics change for children who may spend part of their childhood in poverty?
Well, we know that the numbers, there's two figures that we have from this year's Statistics Canada that were quite enlightened, and people can get this detailed information off the First Call website or the Campaign 2000 website and just link to BC. There were about 48,000 children who, over a six-year period, because they were doing some longitudinal work, spent all 6 years living in poverty. And, you know, that's quite astounding when you consider that in 2002, there were 167,000 children who were poor that year. There's some children who are poor 1 year, others who are poor 2 years, and of course the majority, some 40% of all children don't experience, or some 60% don't experience any poverty in the last 6 years. But astoundingly, 40% of our children experience some, at least 1 year of poverty in the
Now, one of the things that jumped out at me from the report is that if you look at a country like Scandinavia, then the level of potential poverty in the citizens is quite high, but when you add in what the government puts in, it drops off dramatically, and there is a graph of countries in terms of what the average, who would be poor if there was no government support, and then what government support does to change that. And the report also shows that federal welfare benefits are increasing. If that's the case, why is the income of BC families on welfare actually decreasing? It seems like a contradiction there.
Well, part of it is, of course, that in 2002 there was the really major restructuring of welfare in BC, and rates of income assistance actually decreased to families with three or more kids, especially in terms of shelter, and then they lost their earnings exemption and spousal support. So incomes for families that, you know, are inconsistent either all year or for part of the time has actually fallen, and we're now, as a province, have the deepest poverty of any province in Canada, which is quite a shame for BC, I would think, given, you know, how wealthy a province we are. The other thing that we see is that, you know, when the federal government raised benefits, BC reduced theirs. So we see federal benefits going to families with children increasing at the same time that BC, the benefits that BC provides decreasing, and overall the BC benefit decreases were greater than the increases from the federal government.
So it didn't improve the situation at all that the federal government was putting more money into welfare benefits.
Actually, for families on income assistance, the federal government is now picking up a much bigger share, and the province has done worse, and families are worse off as a result. And one of the things that we're calling for in BC, as in other provinces who do this, not all provinces do, is to stop the clawback of federal benefits to families with children by decreasing income assistance rates.
Now, the BC Liberals say that statistics are a result of the policies of the NDP, and they say that more up-to-date statistics will show that their economic policies are actually reducing poverty. What's your reaction to that?
Well, we know that, generally that poverty rates decrease when the economy is doing well, given that we haven't gone into recession since 93, and we were seeing continually decreasing rates of poverty. What has surprised us is that there's been this uptick. If it was a really teeny uptick, we wouldn't be so worried about it, but that it was so major in 2002 when all of the policies were coming into play is a big concern. I'd be interested to see whether at the end of, they have just now gathered all the data for 2003 because people asked what your income was last year, and we should get some numbers out early next year of whether, in fact, the rates come down by the amount that they went up in 2003, given how good 2003 was. If they don't, then what's happening is that the BC government's policies are making it much better for a portion of the population, but they're doing that, one could argue that it's being done at the expense of another portion of the population, which works in the low-wage service industry.
What needs to be done on the provincial level to end child poverty?
Well, they're the same kind of things that the federal report advocates for. One, on the labor market is clearly, while BC has a high minimum wage of $8, and they got to get rid of that silly $6 wage first entry wage. They need to go back to increase the number of hours that people are, when they're called out to work, especially so families aren't, putting in 2 hours and having to travel and arrange childcare to get 2 hours of paid work rather than 4 hours of paid work. So they should go back to that four-hour call-out. They clearly need to stop the clawback of the child tax benefit and make sure that all of the benefits that the federal government puts in goes to all children, regardless of whether they're on income assistance or in the labor market. One of the good things that was just announced is the government has decided to put some of its surplus money into affordable housing. I believe the premier yesterday announced that they're going to add another 100 units to Woodward, which is a good thing. I'm glad they're using some of the money that way. I'd hope they would use some more of it that way. And clearly, we need to deal with the child care issue. For many, many families, not having access to high-quality, affordable child care is an incredible barrier to being able to either go to school to improve their skills and training or to enter the labor market full-time. And we're moving away from a publicly funded child care system to one that's more what we call subsidies, which is a fee-based system, which in the long run we have learned just doesn't work. And we would hope that this government would step up to the plate when they meet with Minister Dryden and go for a publicly funded child care system.
How can someone listening get involved in fighting child poverty?
Well, one of the things that we would encourage everyone to do is to go to Campaign 2000's website, that's www.campaign2000.ca, and get on the Click On campaign. It just takes a couple of minutes. There's a message they can send to all the leaders of all the parties, Paul Martin and Jack Layton, et cetera, telling them what they would like to see done. They can alter that message that's there, but it's a starting point for them. And then they just click on and fax their MPs, because one of the things we're learning is that letting your MPs know is really critical, as well as letting the leaders know. So that's a real easy way for people to get engaged. And then the other, of course, provincially, is to let their MLAs know that they want the provincial government to take action.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us this morning, Michael.
Okay, thank you.
I've been speaking with Michael Goldberg. He is Research Director at Spark BC. He's the chairperson of First Call, and he's also on the National Steering Committee of Campaign 2000. You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.